بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، بارئ الخلائق أجمعين، والصلاة والسلام على رسوله ونبيه أبي القاسم محمد.
لا صلاة على محمد وعلى محمد
لبيتي الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين، واللعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين من الآن إلى يوم الدين. We are on the topic of tawadhu or humility, and there are many outward signs of humility, and one of the most important signs, one of the most telling signs, is how somebody walks. As the Imam had said, mashiyuhum tawadhu, they walk or their gait is with humility. And there's a very interesting hadith by Imam Sadiq alayhi salam that sort of expands upon the concept of humility and says, "Inna min at-tawadhu an yarda rajulu bil majlisi dun al-majlis." Among the elements of humility is when a person is happy seated at the lowest part of a gathering, at the most insignificant part of a gathering. وَأَن يُسَلِّمَ عَلَى مَن يَلْقَى, and giving greetings to the people they meet. وَأَن يَتْرُكَ الْمِرْآءَ, وَأَن يَتْرُكَ الْمِرَآءَ إِن كَانَ مُحِيقًا, and avoids disputation even though when they are in the right. Now, what he talks about, the first one is sitting in a low place in a gathering. This is something that I think prominent people or popular people would tend to find themselves having a problem with. The people who are low down on the totem pole, they are used to sitting in the stands way up in the back of the stadium. The people who have some, who think that they have some kind of status, if they find themselves in the back of the stadium, they're not happy. Because, you know, don't you know who I am? I'm Sheikh so-and-so, Dr. so-and-so, professor this, entertainer that. You can only be humble when you have something to be proud about, when you have something, some positive trait about yourself, okay, that you think gives you some kind of status. I think for this reason, you find women tend to have more humility than men, and therefore it becomes very easy for them to make connections with Allah than a lot of men. You know, because they have that sense of tawadhu. You know, some women think that the subordinate position of women in Muslim society, but because they do have a subordinate position, I wouldn't mince words about that. You know what I mean? I think we are a bit too caught up in Western ideas and wanting to justify Islam in Western terms. For us to try to bend over backwards and deny that women have a socially subordinate role in Islam. But it is very interesting that at the same time they have a socially subordinate role, because, for example, you know, you have women being two witnesses with respect to one man. You know, a man has the right to divorce a woman off the bat, as opposed to a woman having the right to divorce a man. A woman cannot be the head of an Islamic government. She could be head of a non-Islamic government, there's no problem. She can't be the head of an Islamic government, and so forth and so on. This all points to me that they have a subordinate role in society. Nevertheless, the subordinate role of women in society is not paralleled by a subordinate role in their spirituality. And so you have a very good example of Hadhrat Maryam, for example, may Allah be pleased with her, who is a person who has reached the status where the angel of revelation comes to her and she sees the angel of revelation and confers with the angel of revelation. And therefore, she is at a higher level than the prophet Zechariah, who is the prophet of his time, but he is a subordinate prophet. He's not a rasul. And therefore, he does not see the angel. And if you know, you know your basic aqaid, you know one of the differences between a rasul and a nabi is that a rasul can see the prophet of revelation, whereas a nabi could only hear him. He can't see him. Here we have Hazrat Maryam, who is seeing the prophet, the angel of revelation, who confers with her. She gets food sent down from heaven for her. And these things astound the prophet of the time, who is Hazrat Zechariah. Nevertheless, she is not a prophet. She does not have the same social authority as Prophet Zechariah, to the extent that he is her custodian. He is a guardian. He's the one in charge of her. Her spiritual status is higher, but her social status is more subordinate. And I'm using the word subordinate instead of inferior, because inferior has this type of essential aspect to it. Whereas subordinate implies, or should imply, the person who is above that person has a responsibility towards them. And for this reason, in the Holy Quran, they say, "Ar-rijal qawwamuna 'ala an-nisa," that men are the custodians or the maintainers of women. They look after women. They take care of them. So Islam has a certain type of spiritual or social economy where those people who are more subordinate, or those people who have less, or those people who have less power, are entitled to the power of others, are entitled to the zakat of others, are entitled for people to look out for them. And so, when we talk about tawadhu, we are talking about people who have something. And men tend to have more pride than women. They tend to have more pride than women, especially in their domestic relationships, for example. And it is because of this very subordinate status of women that they tend to be more humble. And in their humility, they are able to connect much more rapidly with the divine than us. And it is for this reason why the Holy Prophet, peace and blessings of Allah be upon him, said to the man who asked, "Between my father and my mother, who should I show more reverence?" And he said, "Your mother." And he asked him this three times, and he said, "Your mother," three times. And then he said later, "Your father." What was the criterion? What was the criterion? The criterion is her tawadhu. The criterion is her closeness to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Because in Islam, everything has to do with how close we are to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And so that's why you find also that the spread of Islam, or the presence of spirituality or religion, tend to be much more powerful among the lower classes of the society as opposed to the richer classes of society. You'd go to Tehran and you'd be in North Tehran and you'd think you're in France. France reluctantly with a hijab. In fact, you know, the hijab doesn't stop anything anyway. Doesn't prevent you from seeing what they want you to see. And you go to the south of Tehran and you're thinking in Qom. Because in the southern part of the city, this is where a large amount of the poorer people live. Similarly, when you see the spread of Islam in the United States of America, for example, the spread of Islam is very rapid among African Americans and Latinos. Why? Because they are the more oppressed classes. They are the more deprived classes. When the economy goes down, their economy goes down faster. So you find the more humble you are, the more prone you are to making touch or getting in touch with the divine. And so it says here that the person who is humble, meaning the person who has something, who is humble, he prefers to sit at the lower part of the majlis. He doesn't like to be up front. Too much ego stuff going on there. He doesn't like to be up front. He would rather be in the lower part of the majlis. He would rather be in the stands. But if you notice, a lot of people who have wear their pride on their sleeves, they'll be very offended at that. They go to a restaurant, for example, and if the waiter doesn't respond to them at a click of their finger, they're offended. A lot of us are like this because we expect people to treat us according to our status. Whereas the humble person would prefer to be treated as an ordinary person, lower down on the pecking order. Giving greetings to those he encounters. When I say giving greetings, giving salam, it doesn't just mean giving salam. It means being polite and being the first to be polite. How many of us, when you're walking down the street and we see that non-Muslim walking towards us, you think about maintaining eye contact, just to nod your head. This is tawadu. In this society, you find people tend to want to look down, look away, not look at people. Because people are generally afraid of other people in this society. They're afraid of other people because you don't know who's a freak. You don't know if whoever you look at, they might think that you're a freak too. So there's a general type of distrust of people in society. And so we must try to counteract that. Avoiding disputation even though they are in the right. Avoiding disputation. Not avoiding standing up for your rights. Not avoiding defending your rights by words, but avoiding disputation. Mira'a. What is mira'a? Mira'a is a quarrel. Mira'a is people arguing just to win, just to get their point across. We don't. The muttaqeen do not get involved in this. They don't. They say, okay, finish. All right, have it your way. I'm done. Because what's important to them is just being right. Not to get it over on the other person. Very, very important. And we find a lot of quarrels between people taking place on an egotistical level. Another one was not liking being praised for their God-weariness. And this is something we mentioned before. There's a hadith by Imam Ali alayhi salam who says, "Alayka bitawadu fa innahu min a'zam al-ibadah." He says, "Be careful, pay attention to humility, because it is one of the greatest aspects or one of the greatest things in terms of worship." Why is tawadu, which is basically an internal state, the best form or among the greatest forms of worship? It is because when you look at worship, there are two aspects to worship. There's outward worship, and then there's the inward state that accompanies that outward worship. Now, outward worship might show humility in action, but it need not necessarily be accompanied by humility in spirit or humility in attitude. You might be in sajda, but you're thinking, as soon as I get out of sajda, there's somebody in my workplace, you know, I'm gonna deal with that guy and so on, so on, so. You might be in sajda, but you're thinking that you're the best thing since sliced bread. Outward humility need not be accompanied by inward humility. Ibadah comes from ubudiyah. Ibadah is a form of servitude. And so when you have tawadhu, when you have humility, it is that inward component that gives the essence to the outward activity. And for this reason, the Imam is warning us about humility, that we should pay attention to humility. We should try to be humble, because it is the best form or the greatest form of ibadah. Imam As-Sadiq said that humility is the principle and root of every valuable good deed and exalted station. At-tawadhu aslu kulli khayrin nafisin wa martabatin rafi'in. Rafi'atin. Humility is the principle and root of every valuable good deed and exalted station. Why is this? It is because whatever we do it for three reasons. One of three reasons. We do it to please ourselves. We do it to please Allah. And we do it to please others. These are only three reasons. To please ourselves, to please Allah, and to please others. Tawadhu is to please Allah. And this is the highest level of tawadhu. But we have, in terms of action, we have hierarchy in action. There are some people who have not approached that. There are some people who do a good deed because of the necessity of doing a good deed, that it should be done, and that they put themselves in the act of doing that good deed, not to please themselves or to please others. In fact, doing the good deed itself pleases the self. But the intention is not to please the self, but to see the completion of the good deed done. It is much higher than just pleasing yourself or trying to please others. And what the Imam is saying here, it is every valuable good deed, every good deed that is noble and exalted, that stands the test of time, that goes through history, that people are known for this good deed, every single one of them is accompanied by tawadhu, which means the removal of the ego from the action itself. That one does the action for either to please Allah or for the very goodness of the action itself. This is a principle. Any action that is done for any other purpose is an action based upon ego, is an action based upon something that has an ulterior motive and something that will not stand in history. And he says, if humility had a tongue, mankind would have understood it, understood what it had to say. For it will speak on the realities of that which is hidden and is to pass, that is to come to pass. If humility had a tongue. Because humility, fillah and lillah, in the path of Allah and for Allah, is one where the human being or the practitioner of humility empties himself of any restriction between him and his God. He does not involve his nafs into the actions that he is doing. You have our imams, for example, who when they gave in charity, they would give charity in at night. You have the story of Imam Ali alayhi salam, Imam Hassan, Imam Hussein, and all of the imams alayhi salam, who distributed food to poor people, and the poor people didn't even know who was giving them the food until they passed away. And when they passed away, this food stopped coming. And then they realized that this was the imam. There's a hadith by Hazrat Isa that says, give with your right hand so that your left hand doesn't know. The left hand is a sign of the ego. The right hand is a sign of God. Give with your right hand so your left hand doesn't know. It means do good things so that other people cannot see, so that your ego could be fed. And in fact, the best of charity is a charity that is given outside of the gaze of people. When one does this, when one is successful in suppressing the intrusions of the nafs, or the lower self into the soul, one is opened up to divine revelations. One is opened up to divine insight. And when one is opened up to divine insight, one is able to access the types of truths that the Imam is talking about, realities of that which is hidden and is yet to pass. He says, indeed, humility is the way of Allah and for Allah, and anything other than this is deception. So if you are humble, and you're not humble because you're being humble for Allah and in the path of Allah, then you're deceiving yourselves. You're not truly being humble. You're being humble according to your ego. Lastly, humility is a means of fighting the shaitan. Imam Ali alayhi salam told us, use humility to fight the shaitan. Now, how does humility fight the shaitan? Because when we think of fighting, we think of exploding, we think of aggression and so forth and so on. When we think of humility, we think of passivity. This is a wrong idea, that one can be humble in action, as we see, as we saw. What is the relationship between humility and fighting the shaitan? Well, the opposite of humility is egoism, pride or arrogance. And pride or arrogance is something that belongs to the fiery temperament of a human being. The fiery temperament of a human being. Because a human being is the microcosm of all things. The human being has all the elements in him or herself. And each one of the elements conveys within a particular character. And the fiery element is the element that conveys the character of, for example, anger, or the character of arrogance. You know, for example, you know, we have this statement in English, a hothead. So-and-so is a hothead, right? Why do you call him a hothead? You know, a lot of our terms convey wisdom. Hothead, because when you get angry, your head gets hot. You actually flare up. You can feel that thing welling up inside of you and exploding. It's a flame, it's a fire. Arrogance is the same thing. So when you are arrogant, what is manifest in you, what is dominant in you, is that fiery element. What is shaitan? He's made of smokeless fire. So what happens is there is a synchronicity between you and shaitan. There is a wormhole that's created between you and him that he can pass. This is because you're becoming like him. When you let your anger take control of you, when you let your arrogance or your pride take control of you, you become more shaitan-like. And when you become more shaitan-like, it becomes easier for him to influence you. Just as you need a synchronicity to be with God, just as you need God-likeness, like we are in Ramadan, where we are behaving like God, we're not eating, and we're not drinking, and we're not letting ourselves express our sexual urges, because God doesn't need a wife. We become God-like, and we become more synchronized, if a better word, with God, and we become more God-like. You know, it's the same thing with our devilish nature. And this is why humility is a means of fighting the shaitan. So, for example, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi said, when you are angry and you are standing, sit. When you are angry and you're sitting, lie down. What does it mean? Adopt a passive position. Adopt a humble position. Humility is something that could overcome anger. And this is something very important, I think, for our youth to know. Because we have seen in the media so many times youth on youth crime. And one major type of youth on youth crime that we see has to do with boys and their relationship with girls. And their pride. So you have some girls would tell a boy, did you hear what so-and-so said to me? Are you going to take that? Am I your girlfriend or what? And the boy, to prove himself, he gets angry and he whips out a knife and stabs the other person in the heart. So many times have we heard of this going on in the news. And then we have that things that encourage this. For example, certain forms of hip-hop. Okay, I'm not anti-hip-hop. Huh? I just want to make you guys know that. I'm not anti-hip-hop. Okay, Hip hop was revolutionary music in my time. Okay, it's been undermined by the people who do not want other people to rise up. In the 1980s, hip hop was the major cause for people embracing Islam in the United States of America, because hip hop was a large number of hip hop artists, rap artists in that time, used to be Muslims, and they would have a positive message. Hip hop wasn't about dancing. It wasn't about nakedness. In those days, you know, baggy clothes was the way to go, and had nothing to do with, you know, showing off yourself and wiggling whatever you have. Okay, hip hop was not like that. At any rate, we have a type of hip hop today that is all based upon what? Bragging. Okay, based upon bragging, based upon, you know, egomania. You know, this is me. I'm this. I'm that. You know, I could do what I want, you know, and so forth and so on. And what this does is it negatively influences the youth culture. That everybody wants to walk around, strut around, in other words, not walking in humility, strut around as if they are somebody. And therefore are not willing to let anyone diss them or perceive a diss from other people. You guys use the word diss here, right? Okay, that's making sure. And so you find people being more and more prone to violence when you do not use humble words to address each other. When you use cuss words all the time, it becomes a very, very sensitive thing. You know, when is that person using that cuss word? Is he just using it in normal speech, or is he trying to diss me? And this is why you find that relationships between youth who are into that type of culture is very, very fractious, very, very unstable. Who is a friend today, you'd want to knife tomorrow. So we have to be very careful with our youth, because a lot of our Muslim youth are going to schools and end up being in that particular environment and becoming negatively influenced by these environments. Okay, and for example, in this society, I understand there are a whole lot of Muslim youth gangs outside there who use the excuse of Islam to prey upon the quote-unquote kuffar, you know, to take their money and so forth and so on. So humility is a very revolutionary idea, because humility, as we see, it raises your ubuha, your awe. It is something that is empowering and not something that is disempowering. Now, Imam also continues in terms of the qualities of the righteous. He says, "Waqaddu absarahum amma harrama Allahu alayhim." He says, they avert their eyes from that which Allah has made forbidden to them. Lexicologists look at this averting the eyes and say that it is lowering the gaze as well as bearing with what is disliked. Lowering the gaze, and in lowering the gaze, you are bearing with what is disliked. Not what you dislike, yeah. What is disliked. In other words, you avert your eyes from something you like. You avert your eyes from something you like. We tend to avert our eyes from things we don't like. It's very easy for us to do this. You know, you see some heinous murder with blood being spilled on TV or something. You avert your eyes because you can't stand it. This is averting your eyes from something your nafs is attracted to. You avert your eyes from something you like, which you are not happy to look away from. But however, you disregard that feeling and you look away from it. This is what averting the eyes mean. And you know, and this indicates a very interesting insights into, for example, things like isma. Because we have two things. We have, for example, a case where I think a member of the Prophet's family, a woman came to him in his presence with something sort of diaphanous, something very flimsy, and he averted his eyes. He averted his eyes. And he averted his eyes out of shyness because he did not want to look at that because he has a nafs. And you have Imam Ali alayhi salam, you have a hadith talking about giving women salams. Another hadith where they said that the Prophet gave women salams, and Imam Ali also gave women salams, but he didn't like to give salams to younger women because he said, I did not want their voices I didn't want their voices to be seductive to me. So when we avert our eyes, we are actually practicing the way of the Prophet and the Imams. That we are created with particular tendencies. We are created with particular tendencies. And these tendencies are for our physical survival. One of these tendencies is to be attracted to the opposite sex. Where men are concerned, everything about the opposite sex that has to do with the propagation of the species, we find attractive. The size of the hips means childbearing. Men find that attractive, and so forth and so on. And so this is an instinctive reaction. It's an instinctive reaction. And because it's an instinctive reaction, that could lead to consequences that we might find difficult to control, we avert our eyes from that in the appropriate situation. There are many things that averting the eyes cover, but we will continue after the month of Ramadan with this very long hadith. I would like you all to stay tuned. It would be most likely on a Sunday. And inshallah, for those who are interested, without any fee, you can come and attend. Let us ask Allah to increase us in humility. Let us ask Allah to increase us in wisdom. Let us ask Allah to make the rest of this Ramadan, whose days are numbered, one for us where we could reach realization of the divine presence, inshallah. Tonight is the night of the passing away of Amir al-Mu'mineen, Imam Ali alayhi salam. It is the night of the closing of the door to knowledge. It is the night of the passing away of the criterion between the munafiq and the Muslim, between the people of heaven and the people of hell. It is the night that characterizes the end of a person whose life was filled with difficulties and troubles. Filled with difficulties and troubles by Muslims who did not recognize his worth or did not recognize his spiritual status. And it is something that is significant for us to remember, because we as the Shia, a minority in the Muslim community, are also, like our Imam, not recognized for our worth, not recognized for the profundity of the Islamic truth that we bear. And just like the Imam, we have to exhibit patience, we have to continue to strive to grow in our deen, and to be able to teach the truth to those who require it. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.